and welcome to this brand new episode of ONS Energy Talks. We are just a few months away from ONS 2024, and we will warm up this spring with several podcasts. Today, I have with me two guests to discuss how we can recruit the people we need into the energy industry. Welcome to Jon Eirik Lien and Mahad Nadeem Janjua. Is there one thing that we know in the energy industry is that in some way or another, it will always need a lot of people. But which types of people and how do we make sure they are aware of it and choose the energy industry? I think that's some people even don't even know about the jobs there. And we're going to look a little into how young people choose careers, how they look at the oil and gas stigma that we see in society today, and what education institutions and companies can do differently to better attract. Mahad and Jon Eirik, let us start talking a little bit more about who you are and where your background is from. Mahad, how old are you? Where are you from? What do you do and where do you do it?
Yeah, first of all, thanks very much for having me on this podcast. It's a real honor. I'm 26. I'm originally from Pakistan and I moved to Europe, different parts of Europe, but I started off my, so to say, European journey in 2016 when I moved to pursue my undergraduate studies. I studied earth sciences, specialized in my master's in geophysics, and then began my professional career in the data topics, but I work as a data scientist at Wintershall Dea now in Norway.
It's quite a journey. Jon Eirik, your geographical journey hasn't been that long.
No, that's true. So again, thank you for being here. But I'm from Drammen, so I'm from the eastern part of Norway. So it's not necessarily, this was not the most common thing to do, to move to Stavanger and work in oil and gas industry. But my name is Jon Eirik. I'm 29 years old. My background is petroleum engineering, actually, and a master in industrial economics, so-called INDEC here in Norway. And as I said, you know, from Drammen, and Drammen is a city close to Oslo. And I would not say that the oil and gas industry has a high standing there. So I took a bit of an untraditional choice, I would say.
Yeah. So you guys have quite a different background and perspectives in how the industry you have chosen is being looked at. And you guys are both, just to make that clear at the beginning, you are both closely connected to ONS this year. Jon Eirik, you're in the Young Committee, which is responsible for creating the program at ONS for young the students, the young professionals, and so on. And Mahad, you're in the ONS Young Leaders Program, which is a leadership program. So we're really excited to have you in those commitments as well. Let us start with, how do you choose a career year? Let's start with you, Jon Eirik. How do young people choose a career today from what you see? And how did you choose such an untraditional choice for one from Drammen?
Yeah. No, I think for my part, I was lucky to have an aunt working in Statoil at that time, which then obviously told her much about the offshore work. And for me, I kind of felt that working in the oil and gas industry was the same as working offshore, which also tells me how little I knew, actually, about the industry. So my plan was to work offshore, like my aunt. And the reason why I became an engineer in general was basically a coincidence. My father told me about an article in the newspaper, which they saying that we will need 10 to 20,000 new engineers the next 10 years. And I thought I preferred would to have a job where I actually can get a job immediately. And of course, I chose Stavanger because they said that Stavanger is the oil capital in Norway. So I thought, if I ever is going to work in oil and gas industry, the highest percentage should be if I chose to stay in Stavanger. So that's the reason why I'm in here today. But thinking in general, if you're going to generalize the up and coming generation, I think stability is something that people eager. You know, they want something to stable, which the oil and gas industry is not in particular because it's so dynamic. I also think it's about the purpose and meaningfulness. I think people want to contribute in some sense. And either if it's for the climate change, or if it's to, you know, whatever it should be, but people want to be proud of what they do. I think that's a bit of a change with the former generations. Former generation was more maybe, more wanting to have a fixed income, a good income, providing for their families. While now it's more about, I want to feel good about what I do. So I think these two things are quite quite up and standing, and of course, compensation and benefits. I think in some ways, the up-and-coming generations are probably a bit more selfish, in the sense that I want something, and what can you provide me? It's not about I'm lucky that you want me to be an employee in your company. It's about what can you offer me so I should choose you and not the other company. So I think it's a shift there. I think the industry will feel that in the coming years.
How about you, Maha? Do you recognize this from Pakistan and also being here in Norway?
Yeah, no, I was just listening to your answer very carefully, John Erik, because I could definitely see a lot of similarities between some of the things that you were saying and my approach growing up. But then, of course, there's some fundamental differences in terms of the reasoning behind why I decided to do what I decided to do. One word that you repeatedly used was, for example, choosing to come to Stavanger. What I would say is where I've ended up, and I now use the word end up, has been very much as a result of just a natural sequence of events that kind of laid themselves out because of just the decisions I took in the moment. And the decisions that I was taking were primarily fueled by a need for stability, as you mentioned as well. So coming from Pakistan, growing up there, I experienced a clear, what would you say, there's a clear shortage of energy. There's a clear need for energy security in Pakistan. There's a concept of load shedding for those of us that come from that part of the world. So when you couple an upbringing in that kind of environment with the fact that you have an industry in Pakistan as well that is very well rewarding but just does not have enough qualified engineers or professionals going in there, these two kind of pillars make up for a very good equation, so to say, for you to want to go in that industry. And there was definitely a third element in my family as well, influences in my family, people working in that industry that definitely propelled me to want to push towards this industry as well. Now, the reason I did not pursue an education in Pakistan, there's a number of reasons for that. I wouldn't necessarily spend time going into that as well. I wanted to pursue this industry because I knew that this is somehow one way that I could contribute back in the long run to Pakistan if needed, but definitely develop skills towards this industry. I decided to go to Germany, and then I studied earth sciences. Realized I actually am quite fond of the mathematics and physics side of things, not so much, for example, petroleum or subsurface topics. So I decided to move to geophysics. And then from there, I realized I actually quite enjoy statistics and concepts around machine learning. So it was just a tangential deviation towards the field that I arrive in right now. There was a last point that you touched upon, which is meaning and looking to contribute to something meaningful. This is something that I also realize in my experience now, it becomes increasingly important. It becomes increasingly important, but I would still say perhaps my case now is not so representative anymore the demographic back home. For them still, what drives their career choices is very much stability, financial robustness, so to say. Whereas for myself, because I operate now in a socioeconomic environment, a system that does provide stability and robustness, now I also, moving forward, I look towards career directions that would provide me a little bit more meaning, things that I feel like I could do that add value, so to say, to society and to the industry as a whole.
Let's tap into your background again. And we talked about Drammen or Eastern part of Norway, where not that many people wanted to go to the oil and gas business. How is that in your community? Do you have many friends from back home that also did the same route or did different things but back home?
I would say not that many, right? And that's the interesting bit. While there is a clear shortage, I mean, I know this as a fact, while there's a clear shortage in energy professionals back home in Pakistan, there's, of course, also, what would you say, there's a robust framework that is missing in Pakistan around governance, around the industry as a whole being operational properly, which is why people are not necessarily so incentivized, even though they see a market need, they're not so incentivized to join this market, so to say, because they're not so sure that there will be a financial reward towards the end, which will give them the stability that they're looking for. So that's a bit of a dichotomy that you actually see there. There is obviously a market gap, but people are not so willing to fill that market gap because of the uncertainty from a governance standpoint that surrounds it. And that is perhaps that is one of the reasons why I didn't I decided to not pursue my undergraduate studies and perhaps even a professional career down the line. Who knows what would have happened counterfactually, but that's one of the reasons why I decided to pursue my undergraduate studies outside and then get an academic certification from outside to then be able to come back into Pakistan if needed.
That leads us into the next topic I wanted to discuss, because we know that from your background, Yulnarik, the stigma around oil and gas is quite heavy. It's something that we all need to talk about in some way or another. We actually live in a part of the world where we get a lot of good from the oil and gas. We have built up a very big welfare state. But then again, we're in the situation that we are with the climate change and the need for energy efficiency and less emissions, especially, and new technology. But what I think you guys have a very different view on the stigma and your perception of it. How is it when you come home, Yulnarik? What do people ask you about the oil and gas industry?
I would say there's not that many questions nowadays since I've been working in the industry for 5 years. But I remember when I was a student, and every time I went back home, my friends and other family members or just people were asking, why do you stay in Stavanger? There's no reason to be staying in Stavanger because the industry will be out of order at one day. So why choose industry and profession for something that will eventually die anyway? And of course, in that period, you have the downfall of the oil price, and basically people didn't get job and everything. So my family was quite concerned. You're pursuing 5 years of education, and you don't really know if you're ever going to get a job in that industry. And of course, that I felt a lot of that on my body. You know, the people kind of not trusting my choice. And I'm quite stubborn, so I wanted to kind of prove that, you know, I chose this path. And I wanted to do my best to see if this is possible to do. And obviously, I know all people speaking in Rogaland, you know, people are quite, this is normal. This is up and downs. You know, you will eventually get a job. This has happened several times before. And of course, if it hadn't for that kind of viewpoint, I would probably have quit it, which a lot of people did. We were 120 people in my class when we started in 2014. I think we lost half the class.
Relatively. It started in the really the bad year.
Yeah, exactly. So we started exactly well when I got the seat. I think it was oil price was 100, and then when I started, oil price was 25. So I mean, it was quite destructive. But half of the class quit it quite fast, and of those who graduated, a lot of people just graduated from the bachelor in petroleum engineering just because they wanted to have the engineering degree. But they had no idea, no plan to continue the journey within the industry. So quite few people actually are fulfilled and are now working in the industry, which is quite sad.
But you touch upon something there, because the petroleum engineering degree, even just a bachelor, it's a few petroleum classes, but it's quite heavy on the engineering. Like you could use it for pretty much a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to have, let's call it several degrees in engineering, you don't need to take that many subjects to get that. So I would say 90% is general. It's statistics, mathematics, it's physics, it's the general knowledge which an engineer should have. And of course, you have this subject which is kind of diverting you a bit and preparing you a bit for the specialized master's degrees, but not particularly much. So,
and Mahad, let's go back to the perception and the stigma around oil and gas that we see. I don't know, especially in Norway, we see it a lot. We see it in the EU, the US to some degree, depends on where you are. But how is that in the part of the world that you are from?
Yeah, so I would say that I'm in many ways very fortunate to have had many different experiences across the spectrum. So I've lived in countries like Germany, the Netherlands, Switzerland, now live in Norway, lived in the UK for a while as well. And then, of course, I'm originally from Pakistan. So I've seen quite a broad array of, what would you say? I've had some broad experiences when it comes to experiencing people's opinions on this topic and my career choices. I would like to actually first touch on my experience in Germany. at the start, because I've spent the past 8 years being fundamentally linked to Germany. And there, actually, the opinion on this topic is perhaps even more what I would call radical, right? So in Norway, when I moved to Norway, I actually breathed a sigh of relief, because I actually felt like that not on every corner I had to actually defend why I actually opted to work in this industry, especially in the domain that I work in. Because as a data scientist, I don't actually need to work in the energy industry, right? And in Germany, I think that, what would you say, the greenwashing, this is my personal opinion, my perception, the greenwashing is quite strong. And I think people are not necessarily as aware of the facts and the figures that actually make up the energy industry soup, so to say, right? But I think one of the reasons why I am resilient in my decision at the end of the day is because of where I originally come from. There is no questions. I think that there, having this career choice, making this career choice, is a very strong one. And if you can actually build a career on that one, great, because it opens from in that part of the world, people recognize that if you operate in this industry, then okay, in the EU, one day the industry might fall down. It might not actually exist to the degree that it exists right now. But there's plenty of opportunities in other parts of the world. The industry is only going to grow in other parts of the world. So there's opportunities, career opportunities in other parts of the world as well. And if you've been, so to say, an international person with international experiences, I'm quite open to move around. I'm quite open to experience different things. So for me, it's never been very questionable in my head why I choose to stay in this industry. Once again, I think, touching back once again on the topic of being in this industry, especially in the domain that I'm in, I think there's no better industry in my experience to work in this domain, because it's so data rich. There's so many potential applications. We're only now just starting to tap into the potential of utilizing technologies like data science, artificial intelligence in this industry. So I'm quite happy where I am.
And you guys are both in the data sphere of the energy industry, but that also means, as you mentioned, Maha, that you could work with solar panels at some point, probably, or wind power, or other types of energy or grid systems. That is going to definitely be a big topic the following years. So what's your, if we go into the next topic, what can the industry and the academic institutions do better or differently to make sure that if you take this education into the STEM area, energy STEM area, you can choose after. You don't have to decide if there's that type of energy or that type of energy carrier or that type of technology. What can they do differently? Jon-Erik, you already touched upon it a little bit on the petroleum engineering courses.
I mean, of course, there's some responsibilities for the academia, of course, but also for the industry. And probably I would fall more towards the industry. I mean, the academia is more supply and demand. They provide what the people want, and if people don't want it, they cannot provide it either. But the industry should be more supportive, I think, towards academia and towards the students, because the industry needs to, in some way or shape, they need to be able to motivate and engage people before they apply for the professions. It's a bit too late after the professions. But in terms of the profession itself, I mean, it doesn't really matter in my point of view what kind of engineer you are, or what type of energy engineering you are. But here, the industry also need to be blamed a bit, because when they're advertising for positions, they tend to also be quite specific to what they want. And then you could say that you can work as a petroleum engineer even though you're an electrical engineer. But would you apply for a position where they're stating that I want a petroleum engineer? Probably not. So then something needs to happen differently from the industry as well, in the way they recruit, in the way they communicate this towards the students. So I think there are some confusions there among the students, I know, because people tend to believe that you have to have that profession. And I think in my experience, you had had that as well, because I remember talking with energy companies at career fairs at the University of Stavanger, and asking, I was in Duck, you know, could I, you know, apply for this position as a drilling engineer? Just an example. They're saying, yes, you can, but we would prefer someone with a master's degree in drilling, right? And that's the complete opposite answer that you should give in the terms of now, because now we don't have enough drilling engineers, and you need to, you know, develop people to go into different routes of engineering. But back then, when people were, you had the people that you needed, or basically you didn't need people, which was the case in 2016, then they gave this type of message. So they kind of forced people, especially people in petroleum, to say, you need a specialized degree within the field that you will work in. Otherwise, we will not choose you. And then, you know, back to square one, right?
And now you guys have been in the workforce for a few years, but not that long. Is your experience that you didn't need to learn anything else or anything more when you just got the job? Or is it, do you learn on the job every day? It's a leading question, I know.
Obviously, the most important part you learned through the education was to learn. I mean, quite few professions where you can go directly into the job, unless you're an accountant, I guess, where you basically can just use all the competency that you gain in the university and just starting producing. I don't think that's the case for a lot of us, especially for engineers. Because, you know, we're working a big company like Arc Solution or Equinor, etc., they're quite specialized. So even though you have a petroleum engineer background, you will work in reservoir, but you will work on this part of the reservoir field of development because there are several people here and each have their part of the big package. And you don't have that specialized engineering degrees in Norway or in any kind of the world, because that wouldn't make sense, because then you can only work with this small subject, right?
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, I share Jan-Erik's opinion on this. I think that, I mean, it's a conversation of nuance, right? I mean, I think that there needs to be an academic framework that universities need to adhere to, because I think it makes more sense for industries, of course, to hire someone from a petroleum background than an electrical engineering background if they're looking for someone to work in reservoir engineering or drilling engineering, just to kind of obviously address the obvious points there. But at the same time, I think I completely agree with you, Jan-Erik. I think there needs to be a mindset shift in the industry, especially what I would say people who've been in the industry for a while. They've grown up in times where people really became very specialized. They were experts in what they did. And there was not so much tangential development, so to say, in different domains. I think with the up-and-coming generation and also the kind of work that we can expect people to be able to take on, I think we need people with more diverse skill sets. And I think we really need people who learn in their academic times how to learn. Right. And that's something that is super important. Touching on your question on if I learn something new at work every day, it's not that I do by choice. It's that I have to. Right. I mean, it's a bit of a function of my domain as well. But I definitely know this from people who are working in, quote unquote, more traditional energy domains as well. Petroleum engineering, reservoir engineering, drilling engineering. They have to learn newer things as well. Of course, with the imminent technologies coming up as well, technologies around AI being integrated into their typical softwares, work is not traditional in the way that it used to be 10, 15 years ago, at least. This is what I hear, and this is what I understand, and I think it's a fair understanding. I share your view completely, Jan-Erik, that I think we need to accept a bit more flexibility in terms of what kind of background people need to come with, and we really need to focus a little bit more on people's potential capabilities and have good metrics on how to assess that, but really have that as a focus anyway, because people are quite capable. This is a bit of a tangential point, but touching once again on what you said about at the start of the conversation about people not being, young professionals not feeling like they're indebted to the industry anymore, right? It's more that it's more of a two-way transaction. It has to make sense. And I think that that's a very natural result of there not being any geographical bounds, so to say, on job opportunities, on different career opportunities, so to say. I mean, people are now a lot more mobile. People are willing to relocate. People are more aware of opportunities because of social media platforms, the internet, and so on and so forth. I mean, when I hear these stereotypes from back in the day that there used to be newspapers and job advertisements would be obviously broadcasted on those newspapers. And of course, those job ads perhaps were more localized, but that's not the case anymore. We're living in the time of LinkedIn and all these other kind of advertisement platforms that you can kind of just look up on. And you're one thing, you know, one day you're applying and then a month later, you're completely on a different part of the planet, right?
Are we creating more demanding young people then?
In principle, but I think it's a very natural evolution. Right, it's a very natural evolution, and I think that if society moves that way, and people are, again, it's this concept of Maslow's hierarchy. Not to go too far that philosophical route, right? But when people, especially in this part of the world, their basic needs are met, stability is provided, then they're looking for meaning. Then they're looking for something more, right? And so then they're of course gonna push more. They're gonna look to step outside more to get that meaning. And that means that they're not necessarily bound by geography. They're not necessarily bound to Stavanger, so to say. And so I think that it's a very natural progression that people are moving in that direction. Young professionals are a bit more demanding. They're looking for a two-way transaction. And I think the industry needs to oblige to that. This industry and as a whole, other industries as well.
You mentioned AI a couple of times now.
Can't help it.
No, and I think you both are feeling the impact probably more and more every day. I think for many, and maybe the older generation especially, but for many, there's a fear that will take over a lot of jobs. What, in your experience, where you actually meet this technology every day in some way or another, how's your experience of that? Do you still think there will be need for people?
Obviously, I think it's needs for people. I think not that any instance technology will remove people, but we probably need people with different kind of competency and skill sets. Probably someone needs to kind of govern and maintain and all these models, etc. But you need a different kind of skill set. So I don't think people need to necessarily be afraid of that. But obviously, you need to develop yourself. As I mentioned, you know, people, you need to develop yourself. And if you don't develop yourself, you kind of can be out. Competitive, you know, people can compete you out because, you know, you're not willing to put that extra effort to actually learn something new. And I think that's really important in the industry going forward, because the industry will shift in terms of technology, data science, AI, low code, etc., but also in terms of energy shift. So we cannot remove all the people working with oil and gas today and saying that we need the new people working with renewables. That's not possible. So we need to kind of giving the people opportunity to develop themselves so they can become an engineer in offshore wind from being a drilling engineer, being an electrical engineer, whatever. You know. So that's a part of it, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that we're seeing a complete paradigm shift, right? I mean, when you hear some of our older colleagues in the industry, in my company, I know this from my own experience, there used to be specialized roles for people, I don't know, that were specializing in some statistical calculations, statisticians used to call them or whatever, right? And now these are kind of fundamental skills that you expect an engineer to just be able to do, having some understanding of statistics when they're running some sort of probabilistic models, for example, on reservoir, dynamic reservoir modeling, for example. So I think that technologies like artificial intelligence, although it seems to people right now that it's a separate domain, it's going to become increasingly integrated over time into more specific domains. And I think what's going to happen as a result of that is that people that develop themselves, as Jan-Erik said, in those competencies on top of their basic domain competencies are going to outcompete in the market those that do not do that. Right?
So the people that know how to use it,
exactly,
those will still have a place.
Exactly. And yeah. It's the same thing with the Microsoft Excels and whatnot, right? Those are just basic competencies that are just expected of professionals to have. And I think basic competencies in understanding AI technologies, how they actually fundamentally work, what are the pitfalls that you need to be aware of, what are the screws that you can tighten to actually make sure you can leverage these technologies to your advantage. People that are going to be aware of that are going to obviously outcompete other people in the market. That's how I see it. And of course, there's always going to be a subcomponent in the market that are going to be the technical geeks. They're going to push the technology more and more and more. I don't think that is necessarily so relevant for our industry. We're not necessarily at the technological forefront that we're pushing newer models, newer technologies, R&D in this domain. Of course, we're early adopters and we want to be early adopters. We have, as an industry, a reputation of being inertial, but the hope is, of course, that this inertia lessens over time.
I know this is a conversation we probably could just keep on going. And I know we will definitely talk about all of the things that we've talked about today at ONS in August. So mark your calendars for 26th to 29th of August. We'll gather in Stavanger to talk more about this and all other perspectives of the energy industry. And my name is Ingrid Johanne Stenberg. With me today was Jon Erik Lien and Mahad Nadeem Janjua. And subscribe where you find your podcast to listen more. follow ONS Foundation on LinkedIn and ONS to make sure you get the latest.